I'm Eric Parker, and this is Inter Alia. In The History of Human Marriage, published in 1922, Edvard Westermarck, a Finnish philosopher and sociologist, defined marriage as, quote, a more or less durable connection between male and female lasting beyond the mere act of propagation until after the birth of the offspring, unquote. And while thankfully we've developed a more progressive view on who may marry, recent reports suggest that marriage today is anything but durable, with a reported 50% of all marriages in the United States ending in divorce. For those who remarry, the rate is even higher. So while Westermarck's definition of marriage may have described marriage as an ideal, the reality of modern marriage is something quite different. On today's show, we explore the question, how can two people who began a marriage with love as their bond break that bond through the kind of bad behavior we typically reserve for our worst enemies? Actions we would never consider taking against our teenage children, no matter how insane they may drive us, are not spared between divorcing spouses, who at times more closely resemble warring ISIS fighters than people who at one time shared a bed, made love, had children, and mapped out a life together. I sat down with John Fields, a senior partner in the Wellesley, Massachusetts law firm of Fields and Dennis, and one of Massachusetts' leading divorce attorneys, someone who's handled over 1,000 divorce-related matters over the course of his career, and I asked him, what makes two people who were once in love act so ruthlessly to one another in the process of divorce? John Fields, welcome to Inter Alia.
Thanks, Eric. Glad to be here.
What got you interested in the practice of divorce?
Well, you know, it's probably the same reason I ended up going to law school. I wanted to be a screenwriter, probably much like you. If I know you well enough, I would have gone into advertising, but didn't try very hard. And, you know, through a lack of complete failure of imagination, ended up at law school. And I sort of stumbled into family law, going into business with a family member some years ago, and ended up liking it.
What do you like about it?
I love all sort of stuff that we're going to talk about today. I love the rawness. I love the realness. You know, I love the emotions, the sorrow, the joy, the pain, you know, all of that stuff. You know, unlike, it's visceral. You know, it's just all guts.
Yep.
You know, so that's what I like about it.
When you think of some of the more ruthless tactics employed by one party or the other against each other, is there anything that comes to mind as particularly horrific from your memory?
So, you know, one case that comes to mind isn't a case that I was involved in, but a case that I sort of came across actually the other day. I was reminded of it. It's a case where it's a published appellate court case where the wife actually got the husband drunk, took him out on the boat that they owned in the middle of the lake, and knowing he couldn't swim, actually pushed him off the boat. He broke his ribs falling out of the boat. He swam to shore, and they continued to live in the house.
How did the guy who couldn't swim to shore?
She did misgauge that one for sure. And he swam all the way to shore. They continued to live together, incredibly, for some time. And the testimony that she said she had at trial was, because he had crushed his ribs, she was actually annoyed and hated hearing the way he breathed at night following this incident. Anyway, the thrust of the case was that conduct is one of the things that you can look at in dividing an asset, but it rarely matters. This case, it mattered. She got like 5% of the estate. She appealed it. She couldn't believe that her murderous conduct
so the actually the 800-pound gorilla in the room, though, is, was there an attempted murder charge?
You know, I think there was.
I know that's not a very big deal compared to the asset, but it seemed to me, you know, the murder thing's relevant. I mean, did they ever go anywhere with that?
Yeah, there must have been. I certainly wasn't reading it for that, but there must have been some kind of charge. Yeah, I can't remember.
I can't imagine the DA actually saying, you know what, let's deal with the divorce issue first. We'll come back to the issue of murder later on.
But what are we going to do about the pension?
Right, exactly. How are we going to carve up the 401k?
Right.
Yeah. No, I totally, yes. Yeah. So, okay.
I also have a gallows humor, as you do, about mm-hmm. this stuff, because some of it is just,
well, you have
it's
to,
beyond
right?
the pale. How can you not?
Yeah. So that's incredible.
That's incredible.
And maybe she stayed with him because she found out he could swim. I mean, it's you know, a lot of times you think, you know, you don't know the guy, and you know, then you learn about him later.
Yeah, so. You found out he was a pretty strong swimmer.
But they did end up getting divorced.
And
you can understand it. I mean, there were obviously issues in the marriage.
It's hard to get past that.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
All right, and so that is, I'll give you that. That's a score that. One, John, for horrific.
That's
other examples horrific. Of things that have made your jaw drop, and so you said to yourself, what the?
Yeah, I mean, there's incredible things. Like for one, I had a case that came in, the wife and the husband were separated. The husband ended up in the marital home, and he started doing all this elaborate shrubbery and landscaping and all that. She came by one night and poured gasoline all over the shrubbery and lit it on fire.
Oh, you don't touch the shrubs.
No, I mean
isn't that like, I don't know, is there something about that? Is there a law?
I think it's the Third Commandment.
Yeah. You have to call a shrubber.
Exactly.
But
I always think of Monty Python when I think of shrubber. I've never used that
word. Well,
shrubbery.
Exactly. It was the Holy Grail.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess the question I have is, why did she think that the shrubs was his Achilles heel? I mean, wasn't there something?
He was one of these green thumb guys.
Yep.
So it's like the same.
It
was a childless couple, right? Mm-hmm. So you maybe she couldn't hurt him with the children, so she hurt him with the shrubs.
She hurt the shrubs. And we generally like to put the shrubs first, right?
I mean, I've always said that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's actually someone who came in and she told me the story, and I didn't take it. So I don't know any much about the case because I thought, I can't deal with this person. This is not going to be a...
So if it comes in a certain maniacal threshold, are you less likely to say, I want to take this on?
Yeah, I'm not going to take that case.
Mm-hmm. Who does?
Yeah, there are some people who would take that case. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I might have taken that case, you probably find this too, I might have taken certain cases earlier on in my career, not really realizing,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're sort of better off with being more selective.
Sure. Well, I think that's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, so, yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's insane.
No question about it. And you get to be more selective as you become more successful, John, as you have. Anything else that stands out as in the pantheon of what WTF divorce moments?
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this. I was on the, it was a trial, the divorce trial. I was representing the wife, and the husband was on the, the wife was on the stand being cross-examined by the husband's lawyer. And the husband's lawyer said to my client something like, isn't it true that when you found out he was cheating on you, you threw all of his suits out the window? That's fine. I actually knew that. It's a little dramatic, but she said yes. And the follow-up question, this is where it got good for me. She goes, isn't it true that before you did that, you cut out all the crotches of his pants?
Cut out the crotches of your client's
pants? Yes, correct.
Pants. Mm-hmm.
And she said yes.
Oh.
Proudly.
That's a good moment.
Yeah.
In depositions or a trial, right?
I felt
that's
like
what
a winner.
What's it called, a trial moment?
That's a trial moment. So
yep.
She didn't tell me that part.
Yeah, well,
that
you know,
might have been a detail I would have liked.
So the case had holes in it. I mean, I don't think I'm the first to, you know. I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah,
we're all
it had legs,
in there.
But it had holes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's a jaw dropper. But I'm sure for you as a divorce lawyer, that's got to be a moment where you say to yourself, we're going to be killed by this judge here when he hears that kind of conduct.
And we were killed.
Yeah, you were
killed.
I
mean, the judge didn't, you know, use that as a rationale. But that's. It's awful. She came across terribly.
So with trials, particularly in divorce, which from those who are listening and don't know, in Massachusetts, divorce trials have no juries. They are all conducted by a judge and only a judge. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's an enormous amount of power, if you think about it, that a judge who's basically judge and jury in the
Correct.
Case. They it's are the fact finder. They are the line judge who's going to decide, you know, if the case is being conducted fairly and what the facts are. That scares the crap out of me, to be honest with you. I love the jury system personally, but you can see how a certain type of judge hearing a certain kind of profile of a client could really turn. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you know who those are. We'll be back with more from our guest after a short break.
I want a divorce.
You can't have one.
When a couple starts keeping score, there is no winning. It's only degrees of losing.
I am the one who found this house. I bought everything in it.
With my money. It's a lot easier to spend than it is to make it, honey bun.
You might not have made it if not for me, sweet cakes.
That was, of course, Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner from the 1989 film War of the Roses. We're back in the studio with Massachusetts divorce attorney John Fields. Do you find that there's a sudden spike in the frequency of, maybe the word's not frequency, but as a triggering moment, divorce when the final kid goes off to college?
Oh, yeah. No, it's really, yes, it's a huge,
so it's a huge thing.
It's not a myth. I mean, you know, think about it. You're figuring out sort of how to reconnect. You know, the kids are always there, or the kid is always there as something to talk about, as something that you got to sort of rediscover yourself.
That's one of the things you had in common all those years.
Yeah, exactly.
Their best interests, and suddenly
Correct.
It's just the two of you in
I see a lot of that.
Yeah, I've heard of that quite
that's
a bit.
It is a big trigger point.
There's been a lot said about a term I've read about. It's what they call the gray divorce trend.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, gray divorce is, I've actually done a lot of speaking on it. Was invited last year to speak, of all places, the Utah Bar Association, to speak on it. I wrote a law review article on it. It's fascinating because, so here's the deal. So people over 70 are divorcing at four times the rate that they used to. The rate of divorce has quadrupled since 1990.
Wow.
I mean, it's still significantly lower percentage than, you know, divorcing folks between, like, you know what, 20 and 50 or whatever. But more and more people over 70 are divorcing.
That's because fewer people over 70 are dying.
That's exactly right.
I mean, soon they're going to say, there's all these people who are 130 that are getting divorced.
It's true. It's true. I mean, the idea that a 70-year-old could have 35 years left.
It's incredible.
And so, you know
But
what?
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in the old days, I think we still use the life tables as a way of measuring damages in tort cases. You know, I remember when it was like 74, 75 was, you know, the life expectancy. And now it seems like on the morning shows, they're wishing everybody, it takes a half hour to do all the 100th birthday.
Yeah,
you know,
it's incredible. It's incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So and it's a great thing. But I mean, who wakes up, though, at 92 and says, you know what? I want out of this thing. I mean, it seems to me if you get that close, it's sort of like being 10 feet from the finish line at the Boston Marathon saying, you know what? Screw this.
That's true.
It's a very interesting sort of thing. What leads sort of an 88-year-old who's been married to the same woman, for example, for 70 years or 60 years to say, enough? Or, you know, where's he going? Or where's she
exactly,
going?
Exactly.
You know, have you handled matters like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I've handled quite a few matters where, you know, they're 70, 75, 80 even. And a lot of times it's... I don't really know what the breaking point is. A lot of times it involves someone going to a nursing home too. So there might be other motives afoot for the divorce. There may be ways of Medicaid planning, which something kind of interesting, you know, sort of a self-impoverishment. I just think, if they've got 25 years left, all of a sudden they're not going to be so effing patient with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. And I also wonder whether it becomes a time of life where, I mean, let's face it, when you start getting into your later years, I mean, anxieties and patience and, you know, like you're saying, I mean, all of these things get kind of worn thin. And
it's sad,
though, to get that far down the line.
It is sad. I have quite a few. Actually, I've got a guy now who's divorced, but he's 84. I think he's 85. He's been paying alimony for 45 years.
Oh, my God.
Believe it or not, you know, predictably, Middlesex lost the fire.
I thought a 30-year mortgage was a lot.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's just insanity.
Isn't that incredible?
45. You can't refinance that.
Yeah, you can't refinance that.
That is brutal.
brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's totally brutal.
And the only way to stop was if she's going to... So yeah, that's an interesting one. So now she's like 65 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, the odds of her remarrying at that point to end the alimony are probably quite slim.
They're low. And she's in a nursing home, so she doesn't need it.
Oh, that's even... Jeez.
Yeah, she doesn't need it, but she's
so
okay.
So where does the money go? Just goes into this...
It just goes into... I mean, you know,
it
it's
goes
actually...
goes to the kids, essentially.
It's a cooperative kind of thing. I mean, actually, the Guardian has basically said, hey, you know, he's been paying for a long time, but honestly, he doesn't need to pay anymore. And so they actually, you know, it was actually very nice. They actually initiated it. But
wow, that doesn't happen often either.
No,
though,
it doesn't happen at all. Actually, it happened in another case. I have the same case. It happened in another case, too. Yeah, so, you know, there's good people out there still. But yeah, no, this was a 1978 file that the court hasn't found yet, which doesn't surprise me. I certainly couldn't keep anything for 40
That's
years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know what's more amazing, that she gave up the alimony or paid for 45 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that is amazing.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
We'll be back with more from John Fields after a short break. How effective, from your experience, how effective is marriage counseling as a means of obviating divorce?
Well, you know, I think marriage counseling. So, a couple things from my own experience, just sort of knowing what I know about people and all that sort of stuff. I think it's very effective. To sort of see if you can get at the root of whatever's causing the problems, but you got to do it before you meet me. By the time you get to me, it's not always too late. But
why is that though? Why couldn't it be? And I know you well enough to know you.
Yeah.
It's not a business incentive. But
my
point is simply that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you know? For a lot of people, therapy is something they've never even given thought to.
Correct.
So they think very often it won't necessarily be effective, when in fact, if they tried it and maybe tried it a long time ago, things might have improved. But I guess my question is, do you ever introduce it and say, you know, the things you're describing to me are something that maybe you guys could work on?
Yeah. I actually, strangely enough, I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sort of think that, like, as a divorce lawyer, sort of not a business thing. Obviously, it's anti-business for me, but I sort of think it's my responsibility.
Yeah, no, I can
to
understand.
Actually bring that up.
Yeah,
you know, and I bring it up all the time.
It not sounds, in it sounds like it's going to shorten. I mean, the number of with 50 to whatever percent in divorce.
I'm,
it's
busy,
not gonna,
I'm
know,
busy enough.
I would imagine
I'm
you
busy
are.
Enough.
Yeah.
But I do bring it up because you know I'm often the last stop, so I can actually be pretty impactful, just as the you know, the friend who's not yesing them.
You have to be part therapist yourself, don't you?
You have to.
You get the calls 7 days a
week?
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, I'm sure
I do.
You do. But
I don't mind it. I mean, that's what it's fine.
And even after the divorce, you must still get the calls from those spouses who say, you know, she's calling and saying, look, I have theater tickets, and he hasn't picked up the kids yet.
Correct. I get that all the time. I get, like, you know, he's got Tuesday visitation, but, you know, her mother died.
How do you manage that? I mean,
you know?
Doesn't that, I mean...
Yeah, that is...
And they pay you for that.
Yeah, no, they pay me for it. Yeah, they pay me for it. I just have to try to walk them through. I say, look, I know it's Tuesday visitation, but her mother died. She's got to go to the funeral with the kids.
And they'll say
she
no.
She always gets away with it, you
right,
know.
Right.
Okay, really?
Yeah, that really
yeah,
is
you know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Listen, I can't thank you enough for being
in
the studio today. It's been such a great conversation.
Yeah, great.
And
great to be here.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
My guest today was John Fields. John is a senior partner in the Wellesley Law Firm of Fields & Dennis, LLP, where he concentrates exclusively in the area of domestic relations law. John is a 1986 graduate of Amherst College and a 1990 graduate of Boston University's School of Law. He's a fellow in the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, of which there are only 49 in all of Massachusetts. Inter Alia is a production of Roll Saber Media, with production support provided by Mage Consulting, LLC, and Radio Entrepreneurs. Our producer is Alex Cooper. Our sound engineer is Chris Jarrell. To listen to more episodes of Inter Alia, visit rollsaber.com. That's rollsaber.com.